Morning, everybody.
Morning.
Yeah, it is in fact the morning. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And if you're listening to us today, you're definitely on the internet, because something is going on in Seattle that's apparently more important than we are.
And traffic in general.
Yeah, that noise is more important than your life. Oh, sorry, negative land reference. Had to go with it. So what is CFAIR? I've been here 7 years. I have no idea what CFAIR is.
CFAIR is like an eight-year-old's dream. There's pirates, there's jet fighter planes, there are hydroplane boats, and unfortunately, with, you know, a lot of little kids' dreams, there's also some really drunk, unruly adults.
Okay, so if it's CFAIR, why are there planes? Because they do like that sport flying thing.
Well, they are Navy planes.
Oh, he said. Okay.
They're the Blue Angels, for those who are not familiar with CFAIR. This is our local Seattle celebration of all things Seattle, but they're only Seattle once a year. Like,
yeah,
the Blue Angels and hydroplanes.
Yeah, the Blue Angels are so Seattle, they practice in Pensacola, Florida. Hey!
Right.
So we have some really, really fun announcements. Don't skip these because they're fun. On Sunday, September 23rd, Ask an Atheist presents Shelley Siegel at the Swiss Restaurant and Pub in Tacoma. The Australian singer-songwriter returns to the Pacific Northwest on the heels of the May 2015 release of her latest EP, Strange Feeling. This is an all-ages show. Check Humanists of Washington, Secular South Sound meetup page, or the Ask an Atheist Facebook event for more information. I imagine you're pretty happy about that, Dan.
Oh, Shelley, your voice is liquid silver.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to that. The Swiss is a great venue for music. Sounds good. This time, there will be no political weirdness. We can just have fun, and that'll be great. I imagine she may be in the studio when she's in town.
Nice.
That'll be the first time I imagine she might play, and that would be fun. I've not done music here yet, so that'd be cool. Also, we're going on vacation. So after this episode, we're going to be pre-recorded for a little while, but Ask an Atheist will be appearing at the Skept Dakota Conference in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, on September 29th. Meet up with us, attendees, and speakers on Friday night, attend the conference Saturday, and see a live show of Ask an Atheist that evening. Yeah, we're going back on the road, but just to South Dakota again, where we stopped in... we stopped in on the two oil change tour. So, but more that just I love doing live shows. I really love doing live shows.
And yeah, the last one cost you the shirt off your back.
I am just now getting my my clothes back under control. Well, if you want to call this control. A missionary group plans to use balloons to send Bibles into North Korea. The South Korean-based charity, Voice of the Martyrs, plans to send the Bibles over the border and use electronic tracking app? Mm-hmm. Oh, that's good. CEO Eric Foley admits that North Koreans who even pick up a Bible are at risk of being executed. In a statement, he said, in North Korea, even children are aware of the risks of possessing a Bible. Even socks, clothes, or food are dangerous.
So what's with the tracking app here? I mean, I'm sure you want to know if your Bibles have arrived, but let's say that there is a North Korean who also uses this tracking app. Well, they know exactly where to look for the people they're going to execute for having a Bible, right?
They don't even need to know that the trapping app, let's be honest, trapping. Because that's what it is.
Yeah.
They don't need to know how it works. If it works over a radio... It'll be triangulated. That's part of the security problems with radios. I don't even have to know what you're saying to know that you're saying it. And if they have this unique tracking app thing going on, yeah, you're basically painting targets on people.
Mm-hmm.
Voice of the Martyrs, indeed.
Wow.
They're outsourcing their martyrdom. What are they hoping? That these people have very fast reading and comprehension skills? That the Bible, they can process the entire Bible before a bullet takes them out?
This religion will self-destruct in 30 seconds.
I want to know if the propaganda that they've already been exposed to, you know, they'll pick up a Bible and just be like, I guess it's a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. More of the same.
You know, that'd be weird if they just, they keep throwing these things at us. They don't mean anything. None of us speak English.
Wouldn't it be more convenient to hide a chick track in a loaf of bread than to send a whole Bible?
Yes, without a tracking thing, without a please kill me button. That would be good.
It's like if somebody was forcing you to play Atari's Custer's Revenge all day, and then someone else keeps trying to hand you the ET cartridge, you're like, you know, it's not better.
Wow. Okay. Everybody Google Custer's Revenge. Unless you're a kid, then don't. Ed, I'm now reminded that I haven't actually introduced anybody. How are you doing back from your vacation, Dan?
I'm doing great. Fully recharged.
Yeah. You went to Rhode Island and did a thing.
Yeah. Working for the Nature Conservancy in the LEAF program, where we take inner city kids from high schools and try to get them out into environmental conservation projects and help them understand the world of nature around them that they really don't get to see very much in the city, and show them its importance and kind of get them on the first track towards either being a volunteer, or some of them are even considering environmental causes as careers. So.
Oh, wow. Well, that's apparently you're very persuasive. And joining us for the first time in a while one of the creators of the show and a stand-up comedian, Jeremy Whitman. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm pretty good.
Awesome. So, we're just so you're aware, this is an internet-only episode, and then this also starts the Ask an Atheist summer vacation. But we're recording a whole bunch of episodes today, if you happen to be listening. But we have a lot of interesting interviews lined up, and they're all today, and I'm going to go insane. It's going to be great. You're going to see over the intervening weeks, you're going to be seeing a slow decline of my sanity. Not that I'm starting from anywhere great. A former Indiana State employee is suing after being fired for refusing to process marriage applications of same-sex couples. Linda Summers, former employee of the Harrison County Clerk's Office, filed the lawsuit because she was fired after delivering a letter to the county clerk claiming that processing marriage applications of same-sex couples violated her sincerely held beliefs. Summers' lawyer claims that she has a constitutionally protected right to exercise her beliefs, refusing to process the licenses without any harm to same-sex couples because there were other employees in the office willing to do so.
That's great. I hope she wins that. I will become religious if you can just hand your work off. My religion only allows me to play Xbox from 9 till 5.
It's sincerely hell.
Yeah.
Where I come from, if you don't do your job, you get fired. And it sounds like she's not willing to do a part of her job. I'm sorry, but
I feel about these post-legalized gay marriage lawsuits exactly as I feel about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, which is, it will not stop within our lifetime, and they're all basically the same story, so if you don't find them entertaining, you're going to be really annoyed for the next 30 years. That's how I feel about these.
I wonder if Mike's listening. Right. Yeah, that's about the long and short of it. This is very much like what's being said, what we said, was it last week, about the pharmacists and the ruling about pharmacists, which was you're not allowed to not dispense medications, whatever. If you're the only one in the area who can do it, you have to do it. But if you're the only one, if there's somebody in your pharmacy who can do it for you, then that's fine. But you cannot not dispense medication.
Right.
This is kind of the same. She is saying that there's somebody in the office willing to do it, so she shouldn't have to. Yeah, I mean, good luck getting a promotion, but you should be allowed.
A pharmacist doesn't work for the government, though.
That's true. That is very true. And if you don't like, you know, if you have a moral compunction against, you know, human beings, I guess, maybe the civil service isn't the place you should be.
Mm-hmm. You know? I'm not unsympathetic to her job description has changed wildly, very quickly.
Sure. Yeah,
they're fighting against a worldview that's very deeply held. Mm-hmm. That hasn't been challenged at this level in a long time. That said, the logic behind this is ridiculous. To be able to push off your work on someone else for religious reasons, you have the wrong job at that point. And to say it violates your freedom of speech is wrong, because it doesn't violate your freedom of speech. If you want to protest this, you should have quit publicly.
Right.
That is your freedom of speech.
Well, that is the thing about it that especially politicians don't seem to understand, is that when they go, oh, wait, I'm not allowed to discriminate against people when I'm a politician? Well, that's against my religion. I believe that these people are lesser people. But I mean, because it says so in my book. That's exactly what they're saying. But what they seem to forget is that when they are a politician, when you're elected mayor of your hovel or whatever, you get assigned to the district council in the least populated part of a particular county. Hint, hint. You're not you. You are the government, and the government has constraints on speech that the public does not.
Mm-hmm.
And just because you're a person doesn't mean that you can do whatever you like when you're at your job. I can't do whatever I like when I'm at my job, and I own this company.
Sure. I used to work for Pizza Hut many, many, many years ago when I was 16.
I find that incredibly difficult to believe.
I did. And we had to sign a non-disclosure agreement saying that we would not share Pizza Hut secrets with other pizza places if we happened to work there.
So you weren't allowed to tell people you put sugar in everything?
Right. And so what am I going to do? Am I going to say, oh, well, this violates my freedom of speech. I should be free to talk about Pizza Hut secrets. Well, you know what? As long as I'm on the clock, I'm representing the company and you know, I'm going to have to abide by their rules.
Right.
And I think it's the same thing if you're a government employee. Like, you don't get to, you know, make your own statements when you're on the clock as a government employee. You have to be an official representative of the government, whether you like it or not. You can do freedom of speech on your off time. That's
absolutely.
I guess this would be akin to saying, I fill out tax forms for a job, but my religion says that government forms are bad. Therefore, I drew my own in crayon. is that kind of where we are here?
Yeah, I'd be interested to see how that goes.
Maybe you want to give it a shot?
Maybe.
My very own W-9 by Sam Olvey, age 38.
I happen to know a tax preparer who just might be up for running that experiment once.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so the way we do that is we either go with Lucian Greaves and do the whole, Satanic Temple thing, or we could go retro and do Church of the Subgenius, where the whole point of the religion is to slack off. So it'd be a deeply held religious belief to not do anything. Right. To basically eat Cheetos and watch episodes of Red Dwarf on YouTube while I'm working.
Oh, see, what I was thinking was just basically making a Form 1040, you know, and copying it, but just copying it in crayon, filling it out in crayon, and then sending that in. And just, let's just see what happens. Let's just see. Will they accept it?
Yeah.
Will you get a refund?
When they don't even call you back, you go, hey, that's against my religion. My religion says this. I have a sincerely held belief that you have to... No.
Right, yeah.
Yeah. That said, like I said before, if there's somebody else in the office willing to do so, I guess, you know, I do think that's okay, and I do think that's probably how this is going to fall down. Unfortunately, I think she might win this one just because of that. It's like nobody's...
feel that's a pretty slippery slope if you can pass your work off because of religious belief.
I agree it's a pretty slippery slope, but it's a compelling slippery slope for a lot of politicians because it's a compromise and they don't have to look like, you know, they're against religion because they're behind the civil rights for other people. Because, mm-hmm. you know, that's worked out real well so far.
Well, I think the way that they filed this lawsuit and the bad interpretation of the First Amendment is probably going to kill the lawsuit.
You think?
I don't think they're going to win this one, or if they win, they'll probably be reversed on appeal, would be my thought.
You know what? It could be reversed on appeal. Do you think this one will go Supreme Court?
No.
No? Won't even get that high?
Where is it again?
Indiana.
Indiana?
Yeah, because they haven't been in the news enough recently.
Mm-hmm. No, I don't think so. A lot of this stuff isn't getting out of the state courts anymore because the states don't want to seem backwards, for lack of a better word, coming out of my brain right now.
So. Okay. Well, this is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We're going to go into a break, and when we come back, we're going to have a moment of astrophysics, I think, with Donald.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't you.
Looking to buy or sell a home or other property in Edmonton, Alberta, or surrounding areas? Demand a professional and call Don Summers of Professional Realty Group at 780-237-4718 or visit dndrealty.ca and discover how he works with you to achieve your goals, save you time, and protect your investment. Don Summers of Professional Realty Group. It's time you hired a professional.
Imagine tropical waters, warm sandy beaches, friendly people, incredible weather. The English-speaking Caribbean island of St. Lucia awaits. Don Summers and his team at Professional Realty Group are ready to assist you. Whether you're looking for an investment, a place to retire, or a killer vacation property, St. Lucia has homes in all price ranges starting at $110,000. Call Don at 780-237-4718 and check out dndrealty.ca.
I'm Mike Gillis.
And I'm Casey Doran, and we want to ask you an important question.
Are you sick and tired of other panel discussion shows wasting your time droning on and on about foreign policy, economics, and human rights?
Or do you want to hear conversations about things that actually matter?
We host a podcast called Radio Versus the Martians. Every month, we gather a panel of our nation's finest minds and plunge a rusty prison shank into the heart of tough questions that have an impact on the lives of real people like you.
Like, are drivers required to pull over for the Ghostbusters?
Is the United Federation of Planets actually an oppressive dictatorship run by guidance counselors?
Is Arnold Schwarzenegger secretly a genius?
And are we being mean when we laugh at movies that are so bad they're good?
So write your congressman and let them know that Radio vs. the Martians is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and on RadioVersusTheMartians.com.
Sam Olvey here.
And I'm Becky Friedman. After almost 4 years, our radio show Ask an Atheist returns to Seattle on KKNW 1150 AM on October 5th.
Join me and my rotating cast of atheists and freethinkers from around the world as we answer some of our favorite questions that we are totally not at all sick of.
Like whether atheists are even capable of feeling love or joy.
No.
Wait, what?
Catch Ask an Atheist with Sam Mulvey Sunday afternoon at 3 on KKNW 1150 AM in Seattle. Find them online at askanatheist.tv.
48 hours. 24 hours. 10 minutes to go.
The motorcade appears to have stopped, and yes, it appears as though the governor is getting out now. It's hard to see. My God, the rain is it's coming down in sheets. I've never seen anything like this. There must be tens of thousands of people out here right now. The streets are shut down. Okay, it appears the governor is making his way toward the convention center. No one knows what he's going to say. The crowd is pushing forward through the storm. The Secret Service is struggling to hold them back. A wave of people are rushing toward the candidate. My God.
Zero. For your consideration, we present Convention and its subject, the nominee, ANNEXradio.com, now on iTunes and Stitcher.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. And now, Donald, with a moment of astrophysics.
Yes. So last time on the moment of astrophysics, I talked about the speed of light and how fast it is and kind of some of the strange things that happens when you get near that speed. So now I'm going to use that same speed to talk about distances in space and how big the universe is. So first off, space is big. You just won't believe how vastly, hugely, mind-bogglingly big it is. I mean, you may think it's a long way down the road to the chemists, but that's just peanuts to space. Of course, that comes from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, written by Douglas Adams. So drawings and diagrams of our solar system, commonly found in books and on the web, may be very well labeled, detailed, and sometimes even beautiful. However, I have some very bad news. They're all lies. The sun and the planets in these diagrams are not to scale, though they are closer to reality than the distances in the diagrams are. So if we start closer to home with the Earth-Moon system, the distance measured via laser and radar is 384,400 kilometers. That's 238,900 miles. There's those big numbers again. So here's some perspective. If I were to hand you a soccer ball representing the Earth and a softball representing the Moon, how far away would that softball be? Let's assume we have a soccer ball with an 11-centimeter, 4.3-inch radius. Then the softball would need to be 6.64 meters or 21.78 feet away. Many people are very surprised by this when I demonstrate this experiment at outreach events because so many diagrams and drawings of the Earth-Moon system show them to be very close together. This is just one example of how misunderstood distances in space are. If we scale outside of the Earth-Moon system, the distances get very large very quickly. So we need a different standard. If I were to ask you how far it is from Seattle, Washington to Portland, Oregon, most people would say about 3 to 4 hours, depending on traffic. Not really thinking about the fact that the answer they just gave me was a measure of time, not distance. However, when you stop to think about it, if you specify the speed you're moving at, using time makes a lot of sense. For example, Seattle to Portland is 3 to 4 car hours. A flight from Seattle, Washington to Washington, D.C. with a tailwind is 4.5 plane hours. And as I discussed in the last moment of astrophysics, the distance from the Earth to the Moon is 3 rocket days, or 1.3 light seconds. Since the speed of light is constant in a vacuum, it becomes very convenient to measure distances in space based on the time it takes light to travel that same distance. And this is exactly what astronomers do. Using radar measurements, we know the Sun is about 150 million kilometers, 93 million miles away. Using the speed of light as our standard, this is 8.3 light minutes. The distance from the Sun to Mars, on average, is 12.6 light minutes. To Jupiter is 30 light minutes. Saturn is about a light hour. Neptune is 4 light hours. And at the very outermost fringes of our solar system, the Oort cloud, where long-period comets originate, is 1 light year away from the Sun, which is 9.5 trillion kilometers, or 6 trillion miles. So to put a light year in perspective, let's go to a basketball representing the Sun. The Oort cloud at 1 light year would be 1.6 kilometers, or 1 mile away from that basketball. The next nearest star, Proxima Centauri, is 4.2 light years away. Using the previous basketball example, that star would be 6.7 kilometers or 4.2 miles away from our basketball sun. The Voyager 2 probe, currently traveling at 15.4 kilometers per second, which is 34,530 miles an hour, would still take 81,606 years to travel the distance to Proxima Centauri, and it's not even heading in that direction. Of course, astronomers cannot use radar, lasers, or the radio signal from spacecraft to measure distances to these nearby stars or even further objects. So how do we measure those distances? The answer is triangles. If you stretch your arm out in front of you and point your index finger at the ceiling, then look at your finger with one eye and then switch to the other eye, your finger will seem to move compared to the background that you're looking at. Astronomers see the same effect when looking at nearby stars with observations that are 6 months apart. From this motion of the star against the background, you can measure an angle, which is known as trigonometric parallax. Using the 8.3 light minutes distance between the Earth and the Sun as one side of this triangle, and half of that parallax angle, and a right angle between the Earth-Sun side and the Sun-Star side, the length of the Sun-Star side can be calculated from trigonometry. This is one of several methods for determining distances to objects in the universe. However, trigonometric parallax does have limits. Beyond around 130 light years, the parallax angles from ground-based telescopes become too small to be useful, though recent space-based telescopes have pushed the parallax distance limit to around 81,500 light years. Our own galaxy, the Milky Way, is about 100,000 light years across. So if we use a quarter coin to represent the 2 light-year diameter of our own solar system out to the Oort cloud, the Milky Way would be a line of 50,000 coins side by side. That line would be 1.25 kilometers or 0.77 miles long. And that's just comparing our universe to the size of the galaxy. For objects that are further out, we need a different method. For over 200 years, astronomers have cataloged millions of stars, and it was noticed that there is a group of stars that have brightnesses that vary on regular time periods. It was found that these stars varied with such a regular way that they were very useful tools to measure distances with. These pulsating variables were found to have a simple mathematical relationship between their variable period and their change in brightness, which allows their distances to be determined with very high accuracy. Two specific groups of variable stars that are especially useful for measuring larger distances are known as RR Lyra and Cepheid variable stars, and they are so reliable for measuring distances that they are known as standard candles for distance measurement. Using these standard candles, distances to nearby galaxies can be measured. The closest large galaxy to us is the Andromeda Galaxy, which is also the furthest object that can be seen with the unaided eye if you're under very dark skies. It is 2.54 million light years away. The light that you are now seeing from Andromeda when you see it left that galaxy when some of our earliest hominin ancestors of the genus Homo were walking across the plains of Africa. Measuring distances further than this requires another standard candle, something brighter and more powerful, something like a supernova, specifically a Type 1a supernova. So the collapsed core that remains after a star like our sun dies is known as a white dwarf. If a white dwarf is part of a close binary system with another white dwarf or some other star and is able to pull material from its companion, there is a chance that the white dwarf will reach a critical mass known as the Chandrasekhar mass. When a white dwarf reaches this Chandrasekhar mass, it undergoes a thermonuclear runaway, resulting in a detonation that completely destroys the white dwarf, and it will outshine its entire host galaxy for a few days. These supernova are so well understood and so bright that they are excellent standard candles, even for distant galaxies. The Hubble Space Telescope detected the most distant Type 1a supernova at around 11 billion light years away. This shows just how powerful and useful these supernova are. However, there are objects that are even further out, And one would think that there would be a limit of 13.8 billion light years for objects that we can observe. After all, 13.8 billion years corresponds to the age of the universe. It's not quite correct, though. If we want the distance that something is away right now, we have to take into account that the universe has been expanding ever since the Big Bang. In fact, the edge of the observable universe that we can calculate and detect is at 46 billion light years in any direction. This means that the observable universe has a diameter of around 92 billion light years. This size is extremely difficult to wrap your head around, so here's an attempt to put it in perspective. Let's go back to our quarter coin again, except this time we're going to shrink down our entire Milky Way galaxy to fit inside that coin. That means that the observable universe would be 920,000 coins placed side by side. That line would be 23 kilometers or 14.3 miles long. That would be the distance across the entire observable universe right now, using the Milky Way as our scale. So today, we talked about distances in space all the way up to the edge of the observable universe. However, most astronomers agree that the universe is probably infinite. We can't see beyond that horizon of the observable universe. And I hope that this has helped to put the huge vastness of space into some kind of perspective. Next time, though, I'll talk about another trick that we can use light for. We can use it to measure the temperature of an object. But until then, I encourage you all to stay curious and to keep asking questions.
If you have a science-based question for us at Ask an Atheist, you can go to askanatheist.tv, click on the shiny red candy-like button, and ask your question. So, Becky, you're an educator, clearly. I think we've talked about that a little bit on the show.
Yes, just a little bit.
And you've done something like this in class, have you not?
Yeah, we have. We just looked at the solar system. So we stopped at that Oort cloud that you talked about, Donald. We didn't get to the vastly expensive and expansive universe. I'm imagining all those quarters lined up. How much does the universe cost, then?
That would be quite a bit of money.
Yeah. So, we actually take the basketball, and we start at the home plate of our baseball diamond at our school, and we hike diagonally across campus, and we're at the edge of campus, and each of my students will hold an object that is scale size, and we look at how many paces we have to go away from that basketball to even get to where Earth is. And it is pretty interesting and pretty fun to do that. And we say, yeah, you know what, I need a field trip permission form in order to get to Neptune, because we're at the edge of campus now. But at the end of that, I often have young people that have been told one thing or have understood one thing, like God created the heavens and the earth and everything in them. And then they're faced with this sort of new idea, new understanding of what the heavens, the quote unquote heavens, look like and what they consist of, and that they're, you know, huger than they could have understood prior to that. And the question is, how do we know? I mean, how do people really know that things are that far away? When we look at other scale models, there's a great online tool called Scale of the Universe, a fun interactive one. You've seen that one, Donald.
Yeah, right? I've used it a couple times.
Yeah. You see just how far out and how big things get. And my students will ask the questions of how can you even really calculate that? Like, it just looks like big numbers. And to, you know, maybe a 15-year-old who is just grappling with algebra or algebra 2, just looking at the unit circle in trigonometry, and just looking at, hey, this is the diameter of our planet. Now that diameter is actually super small compared to everything else. There is that lingering question of, how can you really know? And it's a tough one to approach. I think that you have explained it in so many different ways to make it finally accessible, even to my 33-year-old brain. Because it's hard to then give a student the response of, well, trust them, they're scientists, they know what they're doing. Or trust them, they are really good at math. Because that's similar to a response of, how do we know that God doesn't want us to eat pork? Well, trust God and trust the Talmudic sages who says you don't want to eat pork. They know better than you. And I never want to get into that position of telling a young person, just trust them because they know better. I do want them to stay curious and keep asking questions. But it is kind of a difficult thing to approach when you might not have the skills to do the mathematical computations yourself. So to be able to look at it with a basketball or a quarter or a chestnut or walk across your own football field saying, how big is this? And then say, all right, now you know how big the planet is, or you know how big the sun is a powerful thing. It's a powerful image.
Yeah, it's actually quite a feeling when you can take even just the scale of something like a galaxy and try to squeeze it into your brain, and you realize how big that thing is compared to you. And it's, especially for an astronomer like myself, it's an amazing feeling when you also realize that the stuff that you're made of is the same stuff that huge, ginormous galaxy is made of. And you're just a piece of the universe comprehending the universe. It's it's a feeling that I enjoy every time I go up to an observatory or start reducing data for research. It's amazing and fun. That's why I do what I do.
So one of the things that caught my ear was that astronomers think the universe is infinite.
Yes. So infinite in spatial dimensions, even though the Big Bang imposes a temporal limit.
Okay.
Temporal meaning time.
Yes.
So time limit. So it doesn't go back infinitely, goes forward infinitely in time, but bigness in space is infinite.
Yes. As in the space that it occupies in three dimensions would be infinite. It's just that because of the speed of light, there is a horizon that we cannot see past. That's why we use terms like observable universe compared to universe. There is a slight distinction there.
Is this a matter of the universe is infinite but also expanding, so the universe is infinity and it's headed towards infinity plus one, which is also infinity?
Kind of. Infinities are a little more complicated because they, in general, come in two flavors. There's something called a countable and an uncountable infinity. Basically, what you're looking at with the expansion of the universe is there might be some uncountable infinity void, multiverse, space kind of thing that this countable infinity universe is expanding through or with. But even then, that's not quite a correct analogy. It's the fact that when we look at the calculations of what would happen with the Big Bang and inflation models and apply everything that we know about physics to them, what we see of the as the observable universe makes up a tiny percentage of what our calculations show should be there as the entire universe.
Mm.
So, and by but tiny percentage, it's like comparing, you know, the number one to the number one over, you know, 80 quintillion. I mean, it's so vastly different that it might as well be infinite.
But that's the thing that catches my eye is they've done that calculation and they've figured out what fraction of the universe is observable to us.
Mm-hmm.
And that the fact that it's a fraction at all suggests that the size of the universe is finite. It's expanding. I mean,
the thing is that when you take into account Hubble's law for the expansion rate of the universe,
right,
that outer limit, which you can try to think of as finite, is expanding at such a rate that by the time you measure what it is, it's already expanded to some point that is orders of magnitude larger. It's
sure.
expanding faster than you can measure it. So for all intents and purposes, it's infinite.
But for all intents and purposes and actual infinite, it's kind of two different things, I think.
It gets to be a very complicated subject because you have to talk about which kind of infinities you're talking about.
Right. And that leads, people start talking about like an infinite universe, then you have to start asking questions like, does that mean there's infinite mass? Does that mean there's infinite energy? I'm pretty sure that's not true. I get a little confused by it sometimes.
Then once again, that becomes very complicated because you can actually model things like the Big Bang and the inflation that we have evidence that suggests it happened. If you take the models and the mathematics behind those and you plug in an infinite mass or an infinite energy density,
right,
you still get a universe that looks like what we're seeing as the observable universe.
Sure.
With just a bunch of stuff far outside that observable horizon still.
Right.
Which is matching up to what we currently are observing.
But that's countable infinity, right?
That is a countable infinity.
Which is not what most people think of when they think of the word infinity.
It's still an infinity, though. For example, one of the best countable infinity examples is known as the infinite hotel example. Mm. So you have a hotel that has an infinite number of rooms. You have a bus show up, bunch of people on it, say 20 people. They walk up to the desk and say, we need to rent 20 rooms here at the infinite hotel. And the guy says, well, all my rooms are full. They turn around to go to leave. And the guy says, no, wait, I got a solution for you. So he goes to the guy in the first room, says, I need you to move to room 2. And goes to the guy in the second room, I need you to move to room 3. So he has each person in each room move up one, now leaving space in room 1 for the first person on the bus.
Right.
And continues this until he gets all 20 people in. He still has infinite rooms, and they're still full, but he was able to fit another 20 people in. The thing is that you're going from 1 to 2. You're not counting all the infinite numbers between 1 and 2,
right,
which would then start getting you into the territories of uncountable infinities. So it's still an infinity, but there's a way to at least list, not necessarily all the numbers, but at least a rule that all the numbers in that list of infinity would follow.
Okay, well, this is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. We'll go to a break. When we come back, probably cover some news, something like that.
If you are a humanist, atheist, or freethinker from Everett, Washington to the Canadian border, Humanists of North Puget Sound welcomes you. Your freethought neighbors to the north have been promoting secular ideas for over 20 years. They're humanists with a rational worldview informed by science, inspired by art, and motivated by compassion. Join up for monthly conversation, camaraderie, and activism. Humanists of North Puget Sound. Visit humanistsnps.org.
You must give me your lunch money.
Why?
Because it'll explode.
I don't know.
I'm the Queen of England. I know things.
Well, that makes sense. Here you go.
Wait, Billy. Just because an authority says it doesn't make it true. Come to Camp Quest Northwest, where you'll learn critical thinking and science in a fun-filled week-long nature camp.
No!
Camp Quest Northwest can be found at campquestnorthwest.org. Donations and volunteers accepted. The devil is not real.
I'm melting!
Ask an Atheist may have gone on the road, but we're not making big bucks.
We still need to keep the lights on, and 95% of our costs are for airtime alone.
That's why we need your contributions.
If you've got something to advertise, consider Ask an Atheist in your ad budget.
Our listener Peggy said it best. Step up and contribute to keep secular voices on the air. For $5, you could have a latte or a moment of science.
Take on Peggy's challenge and contribute today.
For details, go to askanatheist.tv or contribute directly via PayPal to paypal@askanatheist.tv.
Need a break from the theistic world?
Live in the Seattle area?
Like the Flying Spaghetti Monster?
Whether you're an ardent non-believer, steadfast agnostic, or marauding Pastafarian, check out the award-winning nonprofit organization Seattle Atheists.
Socialize at the Third Thursday Meetup, attend lectures, come camping, donate blood.
Connect at seattleatheists.org.
Seattle Atheists, we believe in you.
Welcome back. This is Ask an Atheist, 844-SKEPTIC, 844-753-7842. I'd like to take a minute to thank the humanists of North Puget Sound, because it is really warm outside today, and it is not nearly so deadly in here, because we have an air conditioner now. It's very nice. But we should get back into the news, I think. A professor at St. Lawrence College in Ontario was fired for a homophobic remark he posted on his Facebook account. Rick Copeland posted a video of a rainbow flag being raised in St. Petersburg, Florida, with the comment, "It's the queers they should be hanging, not the flag."
Whoa.
Copeland was terminated after a complaint was filed by a former student. A college official said that an investigation determined that he broke the school's code of conduct. After the complaint was filed, Copeland posted that he had to get off Facebook for a while and ask people to pray for his job.
That sounds like somebody got his job.
Yeah, somebody's going to be working there.
Your prayers work.
Okay. I think we should hang people. Oh, no, pray for me. Really, dude?
Yeah, calls for murder on social media. Probably not the best career move if you're in a public-facing position. This is a strange story to come out of Canada, in my opinion.
Well, this is like the opposite.
Yeah, this
story.
Is not how we think of Canada at all.
Because these two locations should be replaced. It should be a flag in Canada.
Raised in Canada, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, I realize, you know, they've got redneck areas too, but we're talking Florida here. It's one of the corners of the obtuse triangle. I mean, it's we're reporting on Florida practically... every week. I know some people make a segment out of it. We're not trying to make a segment out of it. That's just what happens. It's weird.
Florida Man needs a theme song, that's for sure.
This comment that he posted, it's the queers they should be hanging, not the flag. I can't tell if this is a deeply held belief of his or a really cringeworthy attempt at humor on his part that's also something he believes. You know what I mean?
Oh, a ha-ha, like, only serious kind of thing?
Yeah.
Ah, jeez.
Really bad.
Yeah.
It's a bad joke.
I wonder what he was a professor for. That would be interesting to know.
I'd like
Gender
to see
studies.
The rest.
Yeah, ethics.
I'd like to see the rest of his Facebook, but he deleted his Facebook. This is the sort of thing when you meet a crazy person and you find them on Facebook, you're like, oh,
yeah,
there's probably a gold mine in here.
I guess
his Twitter's still probably live.
Probably.
Yeah.
We should probably talk about my secret Facebook account sometimes, which likes everything I hate, just so I can keep up on it. Speaking of liking things that I sometimes hate, Jeremy, you wanted to talk to us today about something that is actually a little bit out of my wheelhouse, so I'm not even sure really how to introduce this one.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You're somewhat of a filthy casual when it comes to exposure to fundamentalism.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
I was speaking to a mental health professional recently, and I mentioned that I was raised by fundamentalists. And her remark, without missing a beat, was, "Oh, fundamentalist children are often more messed up than the children of addicts."
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they oddly somehow find each other on internet dating sites all the time.
Like Children of Fundamentalists?
Children of Fundamentalists. When I was on Tinder, the third girl I met on Tinder had been raised in the family. South America. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wait. What's? Tell me more.
Oh, I don't know. We could do a whole episode on something like that.
We could absolutely do a whole...
The connection between California and cults alone.
Yeah. The family is... It was a weirdo... If it's the family I'm thinking of...
They still exist. This is the
one. Yeah, they still exist.
You're thinking of not the vegan restaurant Tears that have a Netflix documentary that's a Bush League cult. These guys are hardcore.
This is the group of people who... wait, we're going out on the internet. Can't swear, but I can be a little bit more honest. This is a group of people who invented the concept of flirty fishing. Where you have sex with people in order to convert them to Christianity.
Oh.
And you're also, and like a big central tenet of the religion is that all members of this religion are supposed to pretend that when they have sex, they're having sex with Jesus. Because that way it's holy. And if you're a man, you have to pretend that you're the woman because no homo. It's ridiculous. It's I mean, there's some really crazy stuff out there. I could talk about Scientology for 6 hours, but this is great on multiple in multiple dimensions. One, enforced this is just a landmine.
Global organization too.
Global organization.
Yep.
Yeah.
Would you say that they're getting nailed for Jesus?
No, I would never say something like
would,
that.
Yeah.
I
Jeez.
Think you should probably leave.
That's the guy from Riff Track. Yeah. That's the guy. That's what I was talking
about. Yeah, it's a landmine of gender identity, of bigotry, of cultism. I mean, it's like if there were a bingo card for this one, every freaking box would be checked.
I want to know what the free space
There is a website
is.
Called xfamily.org, which has a video posted by one of their members who attempted to track down the leader as an adult and kill him, did not succeed. And this guy's obviously very crazy. Killed his former nanny, I believe, and then himself because he couldn't get at the actual leader of the institution.
Wow. Yeah.
So
there are pretty much constant allegations of child molestation. With the family, which is part of the reason why they're in South America.
Mm-hmm. And they're falling apart, according to her, at least, because now everyone has access to the internet. A lot of these institutions, you couldn't L. Ron Hubbard in this day and age, I don't believe, very successfully. You could Deepak Chakra,
yeah,
but you can't L. Ron Hubbard.
I think you'd have to do it a little bit differently. You'd have to be a lot more secretive and be a little bit more effective. I mean, you know, you'd actually have to have something there. I mean, you know, at Dianetics, people felt better because they were talking about their problems, but you'd need to have something a little bit more efficacious than that. But I think you could do it because Oprah.
I'll give it a shot.
Have you seen, I mean, Oprah, come on. Oprah is L. Ron Hubbard. I mean, in a lot of ways. L. Ron Hubbard just left his body and became Oprah. I mean, that's, you know. You heard it here first.
Yeah. Wow.
Well, to bring it back on topic.
I think that there's a lot of truth to the idea that being raised in a fundamentalist environment, not even getting so deep as to be in a cult, a straight up cult like the family, is very damaging. And I think it's an interesting chicken and egg problem when you think about, does fundamentalism make people insane, or do insane people gravitate towards fundamentalist institutions? I think it's kind of one hand washing the other, actually.
Yeah, I mean, this could be a direct application of the cycle of abuse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a predisposition to it because it happened to you, which makes you kind of weird, and weird people, not weird, makes you kind of sick. And sick people, like, fall into situations like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think a big component of why children of fundamentalists have issues is probably because fundamentalist thinking, especially from a Judeo-Christian point of view, the Bible has a lot of very beautiful things to say about love, I'm told, but the idea of God as a loving being is incredibly contradictory and scary, and it's hard to apply. If you love something, you have to threaten it with eternal hellfire to prove that love, and it has to jump through all these weird hoops and stuff. So I don't think that's a healthy environment to raise a child in.
This is something that I keep revisiting as far as religion goes, because I've never had quite the same interface with it that you have, obviously.
Nobody's ever had quite the same interface as any religious person.
But I'm,
but mine especially is interesting.
Yeah. But we might be a model of that junkie, mm-hmm. Well, that got personal. Wow, I don't even remember. Sorry, I just had a total discontinuous moment. What is it like as a child to live in an environment like that where you are told to love something because they want you to succeed, but then they have this aspect of absolute hate that will punish you forever if you do something wrong?
Children normal. It seems normal at the time.
Okay.
Until you puzzle it out as an adult, it all seems normal. And corporal punishment seemed normal because it says somewhere in the Bible, spare the rod, spoil the child.
Right.
So being beaten by an adult, and I'm using beaten somewhat liberally as I'm thinking about it, and then in some other ways it's not being liberal at all because my dad was an abusive person physically. But so being spanked and being told I'm having to do this because I love you, it's not going to develop a rational person. We should take a moment to plug my Tinder.
Okay.
I like long walks on the beach, and I cry when I hear our God is an awesome God.
Very famous, very good, although not everyone's cup of tea, very gruff comedian, very smart guy named Doug Stanhope has a piece on one of his earlier albums about how some people are addicts and some people are addicted to religion. Some people, and I think, much the same mindset probably goes into being a religious person as being a chain smoker or a compulsive gambler or a junkie. You are feeding a set of neurons. You're overfeeding them in some ways when religion is all of everything we did growing up was religious.
Right.
From school to camping trips were called retreats, and we went to church several days a week. There was singing. So it's an addictive behavior on its own. I don't think it's that far. Somebody could write a paper on this.
Well, I was actually about to take it over to you. I mean, don't these religious, active religious things and gambling, don't they touch the same areas of the brain and have the same sort of hormone releases?
That one I can't answer. Honestly, I don't know the answer to that.
Okay.
But
I will tell you this. Owning a church is just basically owning a casino where you never have to pay out. People just give you their money.
Nobody wins.
On the off chance that they're going to win, but they don't actually learn if they've won until they're dead. Yeah. It's an amazing business model.
Well, you can't...
It really is a gamble.
You can't win. Mm-hmm. You can't break even. But in this you can get out of the game. I mean, we got evidence of that right here. Mm-hmm. Did they elaborate any more about how... about the relative screwed upness between...
No, it was an intake. We kind of shut that down fairly quickly.
Okay.
So we're elaborating about it now, I guess, in a purely speculative sort of way. But it was interesting to see that. I've never seen that. Usually you tell people you grew up religious and they think of it as a positive. But it's coming around, I think, because when I explain religion now, I explain my upbringing as being a four adjective Christian. That's how religious I was raised. I was an evangelical, born-again, creationist Christian.
Okay.
Which, and when you explain it to people like that, especially when you say creationist, they really start to get like, oh, this is this would be an unhealthy amount of Star Trek to expose a person to. Right.
Yeah, there is sort of there's a thing where we get a lot of junk. The atheism community gets a lot of junk for being a bit too strident now and again. But it doesn't seem so much, when we start talking about stuff like that with religion versus atheism, it doesn't seem so much what you believe. It's just how far out in your particular direction you go.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I wonder how socially healthy that is. But in cases where what you're doing is harming children, that's, I think that might be the correct response.
Mm-hmm. I think some atheists are too strident.
Especially,
some of them go so far as like start a radio show to proselytize.
I was wondering how we were going to get there from here.
We used to have a caller who was pretty stridently atheist. Would frequently criticize us for not being atheist enough.
But I also think it's important that people who have, and some of the more strident atheists that I know are pretty open about having abuse of some sort in their background.
Yeah.
And I think it's important that something like this exists as a way to find your way out of religion and realize you're not the only person in the world who's had these problems with religion, especially if it's a mainstream religion. If you grew up in the family and found out that that's a horrible, you know, crazy thing that everyone thinks is insane, it might be a little bit easier in some aspects to get away from that than it would be to walk away from just an evangelical church or Jehovah's Witnesses, which are considered, you know, by a lot of mainstream Christians to be wacky, but harmless. As opposed, you know.
And they ain't.
No.
Right.
No, they're not. So, yeah, there are some overly strident atheists, but when you encounter that, whoever you are, maybe think that maybe they have been through a lot and that you could not really understand what they've been through and that they lost someone when they lost God. They have to go through the stages of grief.
Yeah.
And shock and awe. Not only did someone in their life die, the entire universe changed around them as that happened, which is usually a gradual process, but so you're dealing with that. And they might get stuck in that anger phase of grief for a long time.
Yeah, that's something we talked about a lot on tour, and then that's something, I mean, that was something I learned from you and from Rich when he was doing Living After Faith, was just, you know, how much losing religion was going to be grieving. That was a surprise to me. I always thought, it's like, oh, I'm done with it. Finally, it's so many responsibilities. I don't have to worry about it anymore. That was clearly naive. But I didn't realize.
Well, you've had whatever brain pathways religion has built in there your whole life.
Yeah.
And now your entire worldview has changed. Not only your worldview, your view of astrophysics and how long the planet's been around and many, many, many things.
And it never quite entirely leaves, I'm told. Like, sometimes, like, there's something, wait, no, that's old thinking. Does that?
One time, I was walking with my girlfriend, this was several years ago, several years ago, through outdoor cafes, and we had a small dog with us, and we met a waiter who could have gone either way. He could have been straight or could have been gay.
Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about our dog, and he gets to the point in the conversation. He goes, oh, me and my partner have a dog. And it was interesting. It's not a thing I literally thought, but I thought, growing up, I would have thought, huh, that's weird. He seems like a nice guy, but he's an abomination and must be put to death.
Wow. I don't. Okay.
That is the strangest casually spoken sentence I have ever heard.
Oh, you should check out my website.
Would you like to plug your website?
No.
Okay.
No, we can plug it at the end of the show, I suppose, but not the moment.
Okay. You also have a religious background, but a sort of a different religious background from him.
Yeah. I used to attend a Foursquare church, which is sort of a kind of a non-denominational Christian, but it's very evangelical, very born again.
Non-denominational Christian.
Yeah, it is. Well, there's 40,000 denominations. Mm-hmm. They just sort of pick one.
But every Christian could almost be their own.
But they're kind of a chain. They're sort of like the Walmart of mega churches. They have them.
Oh, so all they're mega churches.
Yeah.
Then.
Well, I would say our church was probably 500 people, and you know I have seen Foursquare churches that were in excess of 2,000 people.
So. Oh.
I don't think they ever actually brought up creationism, at least not in a sermon that I was present for. But the pastor certainly had some expressed views about homosexuals, foreigners, and Asians, oddly, despite that there were Asians in the congregation, and the pastor clearly had some views about Asians, and it was just...
What were those views?
Negative. They were negative views. All these things kind of threw me off because I, you know, have friends that were homosexuals, that were foreigners, that were non-Christians, and that were Asians. And at least one of them was, you know, all of the above.
Yeah.
Just kind of like, what? I don't know. You know, and this particular pastor, like many sort of megachurch pastors, had the appearance of being a used car salesman and, in fact, the real life job of being a used car salesman.
So he was actually...
He was literally a used car salesman, yes.
That's serendipitous.
Uh-huh.
Jeez. I just and wow, okay, so this guy's just a huge box of stereotypes, but I can remember, I can kind of see Christians like, and those gay people, blah, 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 abominations. Yeah. And those people from other places, yeah, they're not American. And Asians. Wait, what?
Right, yeah. And four people in the audience are like, is he talking about us?
Yeah, I have to shampoo my teeth. I gotta catch you later.
He means other Asians, right?
You guys are okay.
Because they didn't like leave or anything. And they were still there like week after week. And I just, you know, I kept kind of like looking over and being like, you know, I don't know. I came from a pretty white and not so diverse suburb. But I feel fairly confident in looking at someone being like, I'm pretty sure they're Asian. Like, I don't know. It's just so a really bizarre church. They had a number of odd things they did. They had an attached school. They had a guest speaker one Easter come in and talk about all this evil that was going on in the school, because children were playing Magic the Gathering and Pokemon and actually literally summoning demons and casting spells upon each other through these cards.
That's straight out of Jack Chick.
Oh, it gets better.
This is how I was raised. Dungeons and Dragons would make you lose your mind and kill people.
Yeah.
And there's this one female student who particularly suffered from migraines.
And did they drill a hole in her head to let the demon out?
And when they took her Pokemon cards away and burned them, the migraines went away. And the particular card that they blamed for this was Psyduck, which is a Pokemon that attacks other Pokemon by giving them headaches.
That's incredibly consistent.
Yeah. Wow.
That's
the only part of this that makes sense.
Right. But going on with the anti-foreign and anti-Asian thing, they decided at this church that all of these evil things, that Dungeons and Dragons and Magic the Gathering and Pokemon, were all developed by the Church of Satan in Japan.
Because that's a thing.
Right. Yeah, naturally. I was like, you know, I actually, at the time, you know, I still had a fairly diverse group of friends who all thought that I was out of my gourd, but were patient with me. And thanks to all of them who are still around for that. But, you know, one of them was, you know, an actual Satanist. And I was like, you know, I don't think it's in Japan. I think it's in, like, Louisiana. I don't actually know where the hub is. But, you know, this guy was from there, and it's just kind of like, this doesn't seem like something he would do. It doesn't seem like he would make a bunch of magic cards to trick people into summoning demons.
So I was going to make the point, the difference between the church you went to and the church that you went to was that maybe because it's a chain that they have to be as inoffensive as possible, and therefore like a lot of stuff got watered down and eroded away, except Psyduck is giving people migraines. I don't know what to do with that. I mean, that is kind of religion at this point. It allows it, and that's one of my biggest criticisms of religion, is it allows this really poisonous thinking, this bigoted thinking,
society's thought of religion as a universal positive, which is where we were 10 years ago, encourages dogmatic black and white thinking based on no evidence as a social positive, when that's one of the worst ideas ever.
I think maybe because it was, like I said, for me, it feels like it was about social control. It's like, because God said you needed to is a lot nicer than because I'll stab you if you don't.
Right.
But sometimes
for religion existing, we could never nail, obviously.
Right.
So it could be that, or it could be, I mean, it could be malicious, or it could be altruistic.
Well, yeah.
The invention of religion, this happens to work. This tooth fairy type story gets them to do what we need them to do. It's going to be used for both no matter what, because it's just that powerful of a tool that you could go either way with it at any point in its existence.
I'm not saying that that was how it was created, but I think it's very clear if we look at history that it was absolutely used to control populations. That's how you got, you know, France and Europe, Rome.
And I'm not so contemptuous of people to think that because it provides control of the population through what is transparently lies, that it's okay. A friend of mine who's an atheist one time made that argument. He goes, I think, you know, there is no God, but we should tell people there is because that way we can make them stop stealing.
It's amazing how many conversations I've had with atheists.
It's like, well, what do you feel about lying?
Like that. Yeah.
Because that's also not a good thing in most senses. Religion and morality to me are not interrelated. Religion to me is... religion is to morality what Taco Bell is to Mexican food. I think it's almost insulting to call one the other.
Yeah.
And they're in no way related.
And in a more positive note, I mean, this is something that we say on the show a lot, is I think when people, when religious people do things, and you know, that humility stuff, people are better than their religion. And like I said, we say that on the show a lot. But they're not allowed to be in religion a lot of times because they have to offer up everything they do to somebody who, if they don't do that, will burn them forever, especially in Christianity.
Mm-hmm. I think most people are just casually religious people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that they base the idea that they're a moral person on that because no one's ever given them permission to say, no, you're a good person on your own. It's your biological imperative to be a good person, and you've chosen to be a good person, and you should get credit for being a good person. And you should also take responsibility if you're a bad person.
Right.
Or if you're not happy with the way your morals are affecting your life or your actions are affecting other people.
Yeah, I tend to...
I think religion is an ultimate getting rid of responsibility for yourself in a lot of horrible ways, but also putting a lot of weird responsibility on yourself to... fix your creator's mistake in making you. It's a cluster. It's just this disaster. The logic presented in the Bible would have to be diagrammed with a spiral graph using the football. and then you'd, you know, it's this weird conspiratorial mess. And it's, if you want to believe that as an adult, that's fine. Do not shove it into a child's brain.
Let's talk about your website now, because we're coming up to the top of the hour.
Oh, okay. My website, it just basically catalogs my...
Hang on.
It catalogs his concertina solos.
Yeah. All right. Go ahead.
I am a stand-up comedian, and I have a website at whitman.space, and I would love for you guys to go there and look at it. And the contact form does not work, so I'll probably fix that today, now that we're going live with...
Yeah. Yeah, we'll take care of that. So, whitman.space.
Dot space.
Like, spell out space. Don't type Whitman.
S-P-A-C-E.
And then hit the space,
space.
Bar. Dot, but
could
you spell.
Use it in a sentence? Space.
Like...
Yeah, yep, you have to spell space.
All right, like
yep.
The place you go.
Mm-hmm.
I got it. That's all the time we've got for today. My name is Sam Mulvey. With me today was Dan Lombardo and Jeremy Whitman. You can go to our website at askanatheist.tv. Give us a call at 844-753-7842. Twitter us at askanatheistwa. Email us at questions@askanatheist.tv. See you guys next week or in about 5 minutes. However you look at it.